Architecture forgot to build one critical thing, its own support system. That operational chaos you feel every day, it's why your best people burn out. Why project fees get eaten up from design conflicts being discovered during construction. You have projects not making any profit, and why you're still working after your family is asleep. That's the daily chaos most architecture firms face because practical training is missing from the start. Hi, I'm Caitlin Rosier, an architect on a mission to fix this. The Mentor Dino Academy is your firm's secret weapon for giving you your time back and boosting your bottom line. It's the training system that bridges the knowledge gap, helping your teams master the skills they need to work smarter, reduce costly mistakes, and build a more profitable firm. Stop the chaos. Visit MentorDino.com to learn more. The Academy is the tool to fix the chaos, and this podcast is where we share stories and perspectives that inspire a better way forward.
Hello, and welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Rosier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. Join me each week as I speak with amazing professionals in and around the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, as we are all part of a larger interconnected community. We discuss everything from career stories, lessons learned, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, welcome to the conversation. And if you like this episode, please do me a favor by hitting subscribe, like, or share it with a friend. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own unique career journey.
On today's episode of the Mentor Dino podcast, I would like to welcome Megan Webster, Principal and Co-Managing Director for Gensler's Chicago office. So thank you, Megan, for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great to be on this. And Caitlin, I just have to say, I was thinking back, I really wish that I'd had this resource to listen to when I was early in my career. And you know, I got a chance to listen to some of the other podcasts that you've put together, and I feel like you've really spanned a lot of our industry. So it's really, I mean, it's just fantastic.
Thank you so much. There's so much to touch on in the industry, because when I started this, I had professionals like, can you really get that much out of this? I'm like,
yeah,
yes, you can. Everybody's path is so different, even if it looks the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's journey is a bit different. So
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you don't mind fully introducing yourself to let my listeners know a little bit about your experience and journey so far in your education and career.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, I just given the audience, my guess is most folks may be aware of Gensler, but just as a quick refresher, we are really the leading global design firm. We kind of design just anything, you know, anything you can imagine, from, you know, branded spaces to airports to schools to hospitals. Across the world, we're, you know, over 50 offices at this point, and we have this just incredible client group. And what our focus really has been is not just about being big, but being influential and being relevant and having impact and really focusing on that power of design and how design can impact the built environment. So, as you said, I'm an architect by training, but my job has evolved from that. And I'm one of the firm's principals here, based in Chicago, and about 6 months ago moved into the managing director role alongside Brian Vitale. So we're co-managing directors of the Chicago office, and there are nearly 250 people here in the office. Leading up to this point, over the past 15 years, I've really kind of focused on building and leading the education practice in the firm, both regionally and globally. And my work spans from, you know, new construction to interior renovations to strategic campus planning. And I think what is super cool and rich about education and frankly about a lot of the sectors that we work with is this kind of blended nature of our world, you know, how this integration across sectors from, you know, even with education, it's like healthcare, sciences, workplace, you know, cities and urban design, all of these things are kind of coalescing. And that's been really cool. And I think has really informed my growth from really being focused on the education practice to then leading one of the studios here in Chicago that, you know, kind of spanned a few different adjacent sectors. And then now the office here in Chicago.
Yeah. And so what originally got you interested in architecture? Were you always interested in the education side of architecture?
That's a great question. I think it's funny because, I'll answer the education part, later, but, I do think that, you know, I don't have the kind of typical story of like, I loved, you know, building with Legos. I did really enjoy, you know, math and art, but as I've reflected back on how I landed here, I think at the end of the day, you know, design is really a people business, and a clear focus on people has really shaped my career. I think this actually started early with just watching my parents. You know, parents are highly influential in a lot of people's lives. And my mom was a lawyer, but she really was focused on, you know, kind of social work and, you know, just helping families, helping the underserved. My dad was a doctor, and even, you know, the fact that he was working, you know, 60 hours a week, he would still volunteer at a clinic every Sunday, you know, and so like their focus on really having impact beyond themselves, serving their community, I think that informed this kind of broader focus on people. And even, you know, throughout my training as an architect, I was really consistently drawn to questions about how design affects people's lives, their stories, and how they might experience the places and the spaces that we design or that are designed with them in mind. And I think that's really kind of charted where I've gravitated towards in my training, in the types of firms I've worked for. And so prior to Gensler, I worked for a firm called Banish, and I actually worked on a lot of the education work there. And so in some ways, I started off in Gensler at a time when, you know, the education practice was just kind of taking off, and got to really be a part of that build. But, you know, I think going back to the question of architecture and sort of what drew me to the profession and what has kept me in the profession, I think coming to Chicago I moved here in 2010. I've been at Gensler for about 15 years. And I had just, you know, finished working at Banish. I was looking for something kind of wider in our industry. You know, I knew I loved the field, but I was trying to kind of pinpoint, you know, how can we be more expansive about the world of design? And Gensler really intrigued me in that regard. It seemed to answer that question. And at the time, you know, from the outside looking in, I really didn't, I didn't know specifically that that was going to be the case. But quite frankly, actually, my boss at Banish, you know, I was talking with him about kind of next jobs as part of this move. And he said, you know, Gensler is a place that's always reinventing itself and they're always doing something new. And I think even in my interview process with the firm, I think, you know, I really felt like, wow, the work is incredible. And there's this real intention around not just having all of these disciplines in design, but really bringing them together in this integrated way. And, you know, that's, we set up our studios that way here, where we don't have like a specific discipline per studio, but it is much more integrated across like interior designers, architects, strategists, city planners. You know, it kind of reflects, I think, the world around us in terms of how we structure our process and our projects based on the client, you know, challenges and the design problems that they bring to us.
Yeah. So when you joined Gensler, what role did you initially have when you joined?
I think it was essentially like a junior designer role.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're the boots on the ground, getting the projects done from the start.
Yeah. It was, yes. I mean, I was in the work. It was like, I ended up working on a competition, like 6 months in, and you know, that was the competition for what is now the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, which is this incredible rehab institute here in Chicago. So it was, you know, like really cool to be like, yeah, I was part of that. Part of that competition, you know, when I was early in my career here.
Yeah. And touching on a bunch of different sectors, because you've touched like health, education, sciences, civic work. Was there a project type that really you found energized you that you tried to lean more into? Or did you stay diverse in that growth within Gensler?
Yeah, I think, I mean, and, you know, maybe this kind of moves into like, you know, early on in your career, like what are the things that are really good advice? But I think I said yes to whatever project came my way. And sometimes that was, you know, this game changing, career changing project. And other times it was on the surface, you know, a pretty mundane and straightforward project. And I think that I found pretty quickly that I could get so much out of any experience, right? If I put in the investment and the energy and the intensity and focus, like I could draw a lot from that, you know, whether it was a new mentor, whether it was a new experience working with a client or having to navigate different conversations, whether it was learning a new tool, whether it was interacting with a new type of team. And, you know, so I think the across the sectors, like I tended just because of how, you know, a little bit of how we, you know, set up the studios here where there's like some fluidity between studios, but, you know, you tend to start to work on kind of a sphere of certain project types together. You know, they tended to be more and more grounded in education, but over the years, you know, I've worked on, big education campuses, business schools, innovation centers, you know, academic sciences, student centers, and, you know, kind of healthcare. So it's sort of, you know, orbited in that realm, but it's, everything, you know, it has this sort of unique quality or characteristic to it.
Yeah. And you touched on mentors along the way in that process and in different projects. Mm-hmm. So how have mentors shaped your career path?
You know, that's it's a great question. I think, you know, mentorship is a topic that is, you know, is often talked about, right? And I think when people first start off thinking about how they're going to approach mentorship or how they're going to find a mentor, it can feel a little bit formal or manufactured. And I think I have had so many mentors, and those mentors have, you know, kind of transitioned into sponsors. But, you know, what I would say is it really comes back to this, this focus on people. And I think my focus on people has really come from that experience I had, with mentors. And early on, when I was part of that build of the education practice, I worked very closely with one of the principals who was really kind of championing the build of that practice. And we had an incredible partnership. You know, he had this great way of encouraging people to push their passions, to take an idea and develop it. And then he invested the time to really you know, listen to the idea and add to it and then encourage that person to, you know, to fuel it further. So it was this, really nice balance between saying like, you know, here's some freedom, here's something, you know, go test this out. And at the same time, I'm not just, you know, I'm not just going to assume you've got this and not pay attention to where you take it, but I'm actually really invested in how you're developing it from there. And then I want to have a conversation about it and like continue to encourage and inspire you. And I think he did such a great job of unleashing that passion in me. And it turned out, you know, around education. That was that kind of spanned between, you know, not only the projects, but also the practice. And there was, you know, there was one project that we won. It was the University of Kansas School of Business. This was back in 2013. And, you know, he tapped me to work on the project. And I, at the time, like that was in this region. And this was our first education project that was a new construction, like new ground up school, and it was the School of Business. And being able to have someone say like, you know, this person has invested time and energy in really developing this this practice so far, and I, you know, want to be able to position them for this project. I mean, that was a huge deal, you know? So I think like when you talk about mentorship, it is like, it's irrevocably tied to, I think, how we operate as leaders, how we operate as practitioners. And I think the more people can recognize that early on, the better. And it's not, I think in some ways you start to sense it, right, as you're moving through your career. And I felt very lucky that I had, you know, that's just one experience, but I could tell, you know, several other stories that are just like that. And I think part of that's the nature of our firm. It's very invested in unleashing talent, growing talent. It's kind of a core philosophy of this firm, and this idea that you've got kind of this constellation of mentors. So, you know, I think that's probably one way that I would talk about mentorship. I think another way too is probably peer mentorship. And one of the things that I really value about, you know, my experience through over the years is my growth, you know, alongside of my peers and starting to recognize like their strengths and my strengths and how we could both be mentors to one another while also starting to, you know, kind of complementarily, is that a word? You know, starting to work together in a complementary way and recognizing that we, you know, had aces and spaces and really could harness those together to optimize our teams, right? And so that went from like being the junior designers on the projects and really figuring out the right workflow to being the leaders on the projects and being able to put together a process where a team could work together really well and really start to, you know, synergistically kind of move the project forward.
Yeah, because as much as people want mentorship to be structured, it's kind of happenstance. It depends on the project, what's going on, and really our profession, each individual taking on that role, regardless mm-hmm. if you're a leader of the firm, if you're a peer, and you can even learn from the young professionals.
Yeah.
And so it's just advocating for that discussion mm-hmm. as you go. And that's what I think illustrates well from even the one story you told and the fact mm-hmm. that you could tell probably hundreds of stories on yeah. how this happens. But for a young professional, they're like, okay, I need to find a mentor. And it, like, you get that advice and it doesn't have to be so rigid. Sometimes you yeah. just stumble upon it.
Yeah. You know, and I think one thing I would also say, and this is, you know, this is something I really try, especially in the role that I'm in now, this is something I really try to keep top of mind. And as, you know, as Brian and I are, you know, kind of continuing to strengthen the culture here in the office, I think there are really three things. I know there are three things that have kept me at this firm over the years. And I actually think that, you know, kind of translates to most people and most companies. If you feel, you know, valued and recognized for the work that you do, if you have a connection to the broader mission and purpose of the organization, and if you consistently see growth potential, I think those three things, if those three things are in place, you know, it's pretty hard actually to recruit someone away from a company, right? Because they, and yes, there are material things like money or titles, but even so, I think that when those three things are strong for every individual, that's really what I think sustains and retains talent at companies. And mentors have so much to do with creating that experience for every individual. And so when I think about like, how can we be working every day, you know, for 250 people to really have that experience? Like that's, you know, I recognize it's probably an unattainable goal, but it's such an inspiring goal, right? That everyone should have that opportunity. And, you know, one other mentorship story I'll tell is when I was, again, junior designer, I was actually working on that competition. The regional managing partner here at the time, she had just really just come, she's come over from our LA office and she'd started in the role. And we were riding home together in a cab one day. And again, because she'd invited me to do that, right? And I was like, oh, wow. Like, and, you know, she said, you know, we should go get a tea together. And so I said, okay, you know, I remember like preparing for this tea thinking like, oh my God, what am I going to say? And I was really kind of going through all the things in my head. And we had just the best conversation. Like the time totally flew by. And she actually became, you know, I met with her. She committed the time every 8 months to meeting with me. And she's become a mentor. She's become a sponsor. She's since retired. And we still stay in touch. And I still bounce ideas off of her. And she's now a good friend. But she committed, you know, that time. And she always said to me after, like, I would always thank her and follow up. And she always said, you know, I learned so much from you. And you said that earlier, you know, that like there leaders that you learn so much from junior talent and from fresh perspectives and from the next generation. And that meant so much to me to hear her say that. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that was incredibly empowering and inspiring. And again, like goes back, right, to like feeling valued, feeling like you've got growth potential and that you believe in this broader purpose.
Yeah, because when it comes to retention, I had a principal who's now retired say, like, the grass always isn't greener on the other side. It's just a different shade of green.
Yes.
And we all can practice architecture. It doesn't matter where you sit, what size firm, mm-hmm. but if you have those three things, and if money is the only thing you're worried about, if you have those three things, you're more apt to advocate for yourself within that firm to get a pay raise and stay there because you feel valued. Whereas if you don't have those three things, or, you know, maybe if one and not the other two, then, hey, if it's a financial thing, then people are more apt to leave.
Yeah,
because they don't feel valued. And they're like, I don't feel valued here. I'm going to try to go get more money over here. But it's more than more money. They're also looking for that value and that purpose to do the work. The money is just a side effect, or I would say an excuse if it's those three things and something's off. Whereas Absolutely. Those that feel like you were end up staying and growing within the firm.
Yeah. And I think that growth, you know, kind of growth of talent, growth within the firm. One of the things I was also thinking about is, you know, like sometimes people ask the question of like, how do I choose a mentor? And, you know, one of the things I used to do early on, and part of this is being part of a big organization and there's opportunity in that. But when I would see people at any level, who emulated either like a skill set or a role or qualities that I thought either resonated with me and I felt like, oh, I can really relate to that, or that I felt like, hey, I really need to learn something from this person. I would ask them to go out to coffee and I would say to them, you know, like, look, you really inspire me and I want to learn from some of the things you're doing right now. And this part of your job looks really tough. Like, tell me about that. And it would kind of demystify that, you know, their, like just my vision of what it was they were doing. And I was able to think like, wow, I can actually chart my experience based on what I'm hearing from them. And it allowed me, there was never any one person where I was like, I want to go be like that person. I'm just going to follow exactly what they did. But it was more kind of stitching together, you know, these different folks that I met with at all levels, and people were so generous with their time. And I started to be able to kind of craft in my head, like, what does my path look like? What does that mean for me?
Yeah. And I want to dive into the path a little bit more. So you've been at Gensler for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for others growing into leadership positions in that long-term side, because you've been there for 15 years, but also in a large firm, because there's a lot of people. 200 people is a lot for just, and that's just one office. Gensler is massive beyond that. So can you talk about your path there? Any advice you would give somebody else trying to figure it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with a story. One of the roles that I've held, this was back in like, I think 2017, I moved into this role as the global education leader. And the way that the global roles typically kind of work at Gensler is you're still, you know, stationed in your office. It's not like you're all of a sudden, you know, out in the ether, but you kind of team up with another global leader. And at the time, I actually had a team up of two other global leaders, and they were both in our West Coast offices. I wasn't a principal. I was really, you know, still kind of early days. And the education practice was a pretty robust practice across the firm. And so there were so many people who had been, you know, part of the practice who were more senior than I was. And I just, you know, I was so thrilled to have this opportunity, but I was also thinking like, all these other people really deserve this role more than I do. And are they going to be wondering like, what is she doing in this role? And, you know, that felt intimidating. And so one of the things I started to do was if I was going on like a personal vacation, or if I was traveling for work, you know, to another office, I found all the people in that office that were part of the education practice. And I sat down and like had lunch with them, or I met with them one-on-one, because for me, being able to meet people at a very personal level and relational level, and being able to kind of identify like common ground, really helps me understand like, how do I not only kind of team up with them individually, but then what does this kind of collective makeup of our practice look like across the globe and across the country? And how can I be a better leader to help enable those team members at any level, right? People who are more senior than I was, but recognizing that like it wasn't about authority or it wasn't about hierarchy. It was really about what can I contribute to this role that will help grow our practice and help make it more frictionless to pursue work or to deliver work in each of our offices. And so being able to hear, you know, one-on-one with folks, of like, what were the pain points? What were the things that they were really excited about growing in their specific markets? What were the trends they were seeing? What I was able to do along with my co-leaders in the global practice was kind of chart out like, all right, here are some things we can put into place that would, you know, continue to fuel our growth across the firm in each of our regions. Because I think I would describe the global leader role as a role that is really about putting into place the infrastructure and the systems That really connect across a big organization, right? A big firm, and also equip our regions to, you know, pitch work, to go after work, to win the work, and deliver that work in an increasingly seamless way. And whether that is like understanding, you know, what portfolio, what projects we need, what people we need on that work, and then tying it very locally to, you know, those institutions or those clients that we're working with. So I think that's one thing. And then I think the other thing I would say in terms of like growing into leadership positions, I am a big, you know, executive coaching junkie. You know, I love podcasts. I listen to Coaching for Leaders like all the time. I think actually people here are probably sick of me hearing like talking about like the podcasts I listen to. And I read a lot of kind of organizational leadership books. And at the time that I was kind of increasingly moving into, you know, going from kind of a designer and architect into more management types of roles and then, you know, into these organizational roles. You know, I think there were moments where I felt really ill-equipped for that. And I was actually on maternity leave with my second child back in 2017. And, you know, so it was my, you know, it wasn't my first rodeo as a mom. And so, so I was like, I got to get some intellectual stimulation. And, it was at a time where I was really hungry for, you know, other resources in leadership. And so I took an online course, on Coursera through Northwestern University on organizational leadership. And it was like, you know, it's actually not that expensive. And it was so life-changing for me. And I ended up writing a blog about it when I came back, in terms of like online learning, because this was pre-pandemic. And, you know, so I learned a lot about just the mechanism and the effectiveness of online learning. But I think the biggest takeaway for me was recognizing that across, you know, my peers in other industries, a lot of the things around leadership that I was learning or struggling with or trying to understand more about, my peers were having the same struggles and they were having the same kind of pathways. And so that was really just, it was so helpful to hear that because I could then say, okay, you know, I recognize that I'm on this path. This is normal. And I now understand how I can tap into some of these resources and strengths and weaknesses to, you know, continue to really grow as a leader and as a manager, you know, in this organization that I'm in.
Yeah. And just taking additional time, but time outside of just working on a project to work on yourself is important to, like, you know, identify, you know, what you want to learn more about, what's that next step. If you feel ill-equipped on something, what's something to help you learn and fill that gap rather than just trying to spin your wheels and figure it out?
Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, that I often kind of give that advice to folks is like you have to invest the time to do the work yourself to chart out intentionally, like, what are your goals? What is your purpose? And that changes, right? It's not like, oh, I did that back in 2010 and I'm good. Like, you know, you gotta keep evolving that. And I do actually take, I think I've spoken to other leaders around our firm too. I do actually take, you know, kind of the holidays. I have a holiday with my family, but, you know, I always take a couple days to kind of sit down and kind of chart out the next year and really think about, you know, what are the things that I really want to accomplish this year, both in terms of the roles I hold or just personal goals, because you're right. You've got to be able to take that time and give yourself the headspace to do that and reflect and really, you know, kind of be intentional about what's next.
Yeah, definitely. And I know you've spoken a lot about being intentional in your conversations, the one-on-ones, and reaching out to professionals to learn. And not all principals are like that. And they're not as good at reaching out. And so if you're a hungry young professional trying to go on that coffee chat with a principal that just seems so busy, do you have any advice for a young professional initiating those conversations and discussions rather than the reverse?
Yeah, you know what? No, that's great. You're totally right. Not everyone is receptive to that. And in my book, like every partner, it is your job to be growing your next gen if you are a partner in any firm. And so that's, I think if that's the case that someone is reticent to do that, that's kind of a problem in and of itself. But
yeah,
but I think
seen like everybody's just so busy that all of a sudden, I don't know where September went, whole month just disappeared on me. So
right.
It's, you're trying to go after all these projects and proposals pop out that you've got to okay, I got to drop what I'm doing and get these proposals done. That then all of a sudden you're in the fourth quarter and you're like, oh my God, I haven't done these. So even if they have that intention, sometimes for those professionals, it's the younger generation that can get them to stop. And say, oh yeah, I need that coffee break. Thanks for doing that. But it can be intimidating. I know when I was starting out my career, I was not afraid of the principals, but principal's a big term and you're leading an office. And after having that in the first part of my career, I'm like, I never want to be afraid of a principal or anybody. It's just a human. And so I try to teach that to the next generation, but it can be scary, especially in an office of 200. So,
yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I certainly have had my share, I told the story of the regional managing partner and being so nervous for coffee, right? Like I've had my share of feeling nervous to reach out to someone. I do think there are some good basics too, right? Of just being very specific about why you want to meet with them and kind of giving them some context of, it's not just I need a mentor. It's hey, I see this in you. I want to learn from this. And, I think there are some really basic things too. It's just afterwards, follow up, send the thank you note. If they had ideas for you, deliver on those ideas, start to explore those. And then the next time that you reach out to them, say, hey, I did this and I really, valued your insight here. And here's what I want to have another conversation. It's been 6 months. Do you have time? I think if people are persistent, you're not going to be able, if someone is just not going to sign up for being a mentor, that's too bad. I don't mean sign up in a formal way, but I think there are enough people who can be mentors in or outside of your organization, that, I think it's probably another good segue is being able to recognize that sometimes finding those mentors outside of your organization, if you're not finding them in your organization, that might be a good clue to say, hey, it might be time to explore other jobs. And those mentors can become that pathway to do that, right? If you're not finding that growth at the organization where you are. I think it's a great point, it's a good kind of lesson and reminder. You're not necessarily going to get invited to have someone mentor you. All of us should take the initiative at any stage of our careers to constantly be looking out for those mentors. I was listening to a panel discussion this morning and this woman who was just super impressive was speaking and I'm thinking oh my gosh, she would be so incredible to sit down with, right? So, there are people at any level you can be, even I'm sure our CEOs have really tremendous mentors, right? Who they look up to.
Yeah. And just reaching out to people. Even on my podcast, most of my guests I have not met until we hit record.
Yeah.
And it is amazing when you reach out to somebody blind that has no idea who I am, let alone I don't work in a firm with them, and saying, hey, can I talk to you for an hour? And most professionals are like, yeah, sure. But I don't have that many people reaching out to me to be on the podcast. Yeah. And so it's very similar from a mentorship way. And it's not until you just ask the question that you never know. And it may be, I can't this week, but can we meet up in 3 weeks?
Right.
And that's absolutely fine.
Yeah. You know, one other thing I was thinking about too, you know, some, we talk about mentors like within our profession, but we did a project recently for MHub. MHub is an innovation center here focused on advanced manufacturing and kind of the next era of advanced manufacturing. It's about 80,000 square foot space. And our main client contact of the team there was the chief of staff. And she and I got to know one another throughout that project process, and we got drinks together like a few months ago. And I had initiated the drink. I reached out to her and said, I would love to meet up with you. And during the course of that conversation, she was like, it's so nice to have some like a mentor. And I was thinking like, oh, I was thinking the same thing, you know? So it was like that peer mentorship. And now it turns out we're in the same like civic leadership program that's part of the city of Chicago together, you know? So it's like, again, that like this ecosystem, right, of finding those mentors kind of everywhere in your sphere. And she actually just called me again a few weeks ago to meet with a woman who's in school right now, who is one of their fellows. And she said, hey, would you talk with this woman? Because she's interested in the architecture and design and planning world, right? So it's just mm-hmm. this really cool, like, circular system that I think, again, you know, it vacillates between, you know, our clients and who we are as professionals and our industry.
Yeah, because it's all building relationships, no matter if they could be a peer today in your firm and they could go to the owner's side. And absolutely. Then they become a client. You never yes. know where people are going to yes. go and end up.
Yes. The world is small. And like people need to remember that. Like I think maybe that's a good basic skill too, is like treat everybody like a human. You know, you're not going to get everyone's not going to be your best friend, but recognizing that the world is small and it is so important to invest in and value people and relationships, because, you know, different things can evolve in terms of who your client is, who your consultant partner is, who the talent is that you're trying to recruit.
Yeah, exactly. And how is, kind of switching gears, how is changing from working on project work all the time to firm leadership and business operations, because a lot of professionals struggle with that pivot because it's going from managing project to managing people in business. Yes. So how was that for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that in some ways, I always describe my experience at Gensler as kind of getting a mini MBA. I did not get an MBA. I have a master's in architecture and undergrad, but I have learned so much about business in this firm, and I've really enjoyed it. And that isn't for everyone, right? I mean, there are certainly so many pathways here. And, you know, one of my very close friends here is an incredible designer. And actually my co-managing partner is also an incredible designer. And we, you know, I can kind of see like, oh, my path makes so much sense relative to their path. Like, right. And it's good that like we, you know, we found these paths that really work so well together. But I think, you know, when I think about kind of business, and we talk about Gensler as like kind of leading in the business of design, that's really our ambition and aim, among other things. I think in some ways the creative field really prepares you for business. I think there's a lot with how you're trained kind of fundamentally, whether it's in architecture or other kind of design-based fields, around critical thinking, around complex problem solving, around navigating kind of really nuanced gray areas. And of course, you know, the focus on people. And so that transition, although it certainly wasn't, you know, a cakewalk to go from, you know, where I was 15 years ago to where I am today, I think I can still trace back like what were some of the things and aptitudes that I learned in design that still serve me well today. And I think that's one of the reasons you see like in business schools, that integration of design thinking and how, you know, increasingly you're seeing a lot of like engineering and business programs. We're actually working on the Purdue Business School as well. And they have this really cool inaugural program around engineering and business. And there's that really nice tie between, you know, kind of design and complex problem solving and the business world. And so I think in many ways, knowing that and sort of starting to recognize that made that transition easier and more and richer, you know, kind of more fruitful. Mm-hmm. I started off, you know, really focused in the work as a designer and as an architect. And gradually, as I moved into a management role, I think I was really thoughtful about how do I kind of craft a management type of role that I can be a good contributor to, or that I can be like a good steward of, you know, that I wasn't trying to fit myself into a box of like what I think a project manager is. And it really did come back to that focus on people. And so then that kind of translated to that leadership side as well. You know, I think today my day is so, you know, if you were to take it like a snapshot of my week, it's like, okay, well, I was talking about like trends in academic sciences, and we led a weekly meeting with our studio directors, and, you know, I'm attending a panel discussion, you know, with this woman this morning, and, you know, we're talking about our financial metrics and business health this afternoon. So it really kind of runs the gamut, and I kind of love that. I love having my brain kind of shift to different things, and that's a very different existence than maybe some other people want, you know? So mm-hmm. I think for everyone, it's different. And that transition, you know, what you had just talked about, that transition between being in the work, doing the work, and then managing, that's actually not just for project managers. It's for, you know, moving from doing to directing, right? So we talk mm-hmm. about that with design directors and with technical directors. And it's really that I think people go through kind of several steps. Like one is that first level of like going from doing to managing. And then that next step of like going from like managing and directing to like really being this kind of executive level leader. And those, it's not quite that cut and dry, but mm-hmm. those two transitions, I think they are tough, you know? I mean, and it's really nice when you're going through those transitions to know that everyone else has gone through that in some capacity, probably, you know, in different ways, because we're all different, but being able to recognize that and as I'm coaching folks that I can see how they're going through that transition, it's, you know, being able to just give them comfort that like, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just like, that is a reality of the field that we're in.
You know, you're just you and figuring it out.
Right. Yeah.
And I always like wrapping up my podcast with this final question. And it's, what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing I would say, I said it a little bit at the beginning, but is really doing the hard work. I think focusing on whatever opportunity you have, whatever task you're given, focus on doing that excellently, and really, I think over and over again when people demonstrate that level of drive, with that level of investment, and that's not like working overtime mm-hmm. or like work, you know, it's really about being intentional and purposeful about your work and being kind of fully invested in it and taking it to the next level. That always tends to lend itself to new opportunities, and those opportunities could be in the form of a project, they could be in the form of a mentor, they could be in the form of, you know, moving to a different, you know, office within your firm or whatever, you know, it comes in different shapes and sizes. But I think when you can demonstrate that you are really wanting to show up at your best and you're invested, I think that is so powerful. And it just reaps, you know, benefits over and over. So that, I guess that would be my best advice and staying aware of opportunity, like keeping your eyes open. You know, obviously not being kind of feckless, but like looking outward and remembering to stay aware.
Yeah, because you never know where an opportunity will come from, or, you know, a person you meet leads to something else down the line, or a project you're on now changes the trajectory of where you go and what you want to do and take your career.
Yeah.
So I think it's perfect advice, and just trying to let people figure out their own path.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I wanted to thank you so much, Megan, for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fantastic to learn about Gensler Chicago and your path with growing within a large firm, because it's not easy and there's so many people in a large firm. It can get overwhelming.
Well, I think honestly, it's, you know, I feel like it's not easy in any firm, right? Just, in some ways it is. It's just a different beast depending on kind of the size of place that you're in. But yeah, absolutely. I'm so grateful, and thank you for taking the time and, you know, to just elicit some great conversation. And I'm excited to support this podcast, because it's again, such a great resource for people.
And thank you so much for being on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today, learned some advice to take with you, and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.